Here's Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
Harvey Weierman, an attorney with a media watchdog group called Watch Over California. Mr. Weierman, the Dixie Chicks are not going away. Apparently, your organization feels that they're a bigger threat than just the comments they made about the president.
Well, the Dixie Chick singing group has been on our radar for a long time because not only are they prone to making these unpatriotic comments, but their stage show, which I don't think a lot of people are familiar with the stage show of the Dixie Chicks, but it has elements of pornography in it. There is allegedly nudity. There is some undressing on stage, sexually suggestive dancing. They undress each other.
We're talking about the group, the Dixie Chicks?
Yes, sir, again. And this patriotism thing.
So people know, we're talking about the comments they made to President Bush. They were ashamed they came from Texas. But you're saying something bigger. They're not just unpatriotic. Their show is pornographic?
Yes, the comments they made about Bush is plodding over a larger issue, Mr. Henry, and that is the essential immorality of the Dixie Chicks show. Now, they're performing tonight in Greensville, South Carolina, and I know that you have many listeners in the South Carolina portion of the country, and I would encourage you to tell your listeners that this show of the Dixie Chicks that they may be considering going to can be damaging to people who are offended by sex and smut, who are...
Mr. Weinman, I want to interrupt. I am not familiar with the Dixie Chicks stage show. I've heard their music, and I've seen them interviewed.
Well, I've seen a lot of...
Have you seen the show?
I beg your pardon?
Have you personally seen their show?
I'll tell you, Mr. Henry, I've been around. I've seen shows like it where these women will remove their clothes and rub it all over the place. I don't need to see filth to know what it is.
But you haven't seen it. We're talking about a musical group, right?
No, I know the groups you're talking about. They're very notorious for their anti-Americanism, and they've also this very notorious stage show.
I have never heard this.
Well, again, you have to be familiar with the country music scene. You have to be following these groups as I do and as members of my group do. Now, they have this Miss Maines, who is the lead singer in this group. She's the one that made the comments about Bush. She takes her underwear off or something. Doesn't take her underwear off, but she removes some clothing and throws it into the crowd. It may be underwear. The people that we've interviewed who've been to these shows are sure that it is some kind of an undergarment. The tight pants and the revealing blouses are just the beginning of the filth that these three women throw on the American people night after night like a bucket of slop.
All right, I'd like to know where you're getting your information, because I have not heard that the Dixie Chicks have a pornographic stage show.
Phil, I've got a number of sources.
Well, name some names.
I've got Stan Stewart is a media critic in Canada. He's heard some things that are disturbing. I think these women are so lacking in talent, apparently, because they have to say insulting things about the president and then perform their country music songs and do it in a way like they're having sex in a barn or performing some kind of a sexual act near a rendering plant.
If you've seen it for yourself, or if you haven't seen it for yourself, how can you say what they're doing, right? You have...
This is an argument a lot of you people in media give.
Well, when you say you people in the media, I think it's a valid argument. If you haven't seen this...
I don't need to see, Mr. Henry, I don't need to see the movie Deep Throat to know what it's about. I don't need to see... Jesus Christ nailed to the cross to know that he got nailed up there. And some things you don't need. I don't need to stick my hand in a bonfire.
But to make these specific allegations of smut and sex, what other sources do you have?
Look, I want to tell you something. Have you been to the Dixie Chick show?
No, sir, I have not.
Then you don't know what you're talking about. I'm talking about people who have seen this show and have reported these things back to me. And I can tell you that the Chick show, the Dixie Chick show, has got it all. Every kind of spot.
All right, our number is 1-800-449-8686. We're talking with attorney Harvey Wireman with Media Over California, Media Watchdog Group. He says the Dixie Chicks, and you know that they made the comment about Bush, and it's been, you know, much reported. That's blown over. He's saying, so you're not going after these ladies because of their so-called lack of patriotism.
No, that's never been the case. For me, with the Dixie Chicks, they've always, by the time the second song starts in their set, they're already removing clothing.
Are you talking to me about full nudity?
Well, when you talk about taking your clothes off, I don't know what what else will happen but to be nude. So, again...
do you have a... and I want to...
You've got a lot of questions, Mr. Andrew, but I hope you're hearing what I'm saying.
Are you familiar with their music? I just was going to ask you.
I am familiar with their music.
Because they're a terrific group. Their ensemble singing is great. They have a couple of fiddle players. I think they got a fiddle player. One of the women plays fiddle. They're a fine act, and their music reflects a sort of an American sensibility. So if you were to say that they... would strip on stage or do something...
nobody's saying kids are welcome at a Dixie Chick show. Nobody says that. It's an adult show. But even some adults don't want to go in there and look at their bare... look at them being nude. And with all respect to these women, they are not the best-looking women in the world, and for them to remove their clothes or even suggest that they're going to remove their clothes on stage is offensive, I think, to any man who appreciates a beautiful woman having to look at that, or even the hint or the threat of that.
All right, Harvey Wireman is our guest this hour. Have you, Janice, you're a country music fan. You seen the Dixie Chicks? Do they take their clothes off? No? Is it something they might have started recently? Is it something that they're doing? We have with us on the line Harvey Wireman from a Media Watchdog Group about the Dixie Chicks. Just when you think that whole thing's going to blow over, this guy doesn't have a problem with them for the things they say. He says their show, and I took some notes, he says the show has, quote, elements of pornography in it, and there is apparently nudity in their show. Now, they are appearing tonight. I think this is the first night of their tour, isn't it? And Greensville, South Carolina. And this ought to be interesting. I think we have listeners in the Greensville area. Our number is 1-800-449-8686. You're familiar with that they are starting this tour, sir?
Yes, I am, Phil. And I'm very concerned about these women forcing their sex, their smut upon people that simply want to hear some music. I heard they do an encore where they will sit on the stools in their underwear playing their acoustic guitars with only the guitar covering the top portion of them. You see what I'm saying? So,
all right, that sounds like it's maybe an artistic piece.
Oh, no. You can say a lot, and I think it degrades every artist to say that three women sitting stark naked on a stool is art.
I'm saying I can see, maybe with the proper lighting, that it would be a beautiful thing to see.
Well, I don't think three women sitting in their underwear, and they help each other take their boots off. They don't even do an artful strip. They just take their clothes off as if they're undressing for bed. And for me, and for the millions of music fans and concert goers across America, this is an abomination in terms of the prurient value of it.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. That's the whole story. Dixie Chicks. Is their show pornographic? Is there some campaign out to get them? We'll see. Harvey Wireman of the Media Over California, a media watchdog group, saying that the Dixie Chicks show is pornographic. This is the Phil Hendry Show. Our number, 1-800-449-8686. We'll be right back.
The Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. He's still Jenny on the block.
We'll be right back.
1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
Attorney Harvey Weierman is a part of a media watchdog group that is monitoring the Dixie Chicks. And are you getting a lot more publicity because of their comments about President Bush?
I would say, Phil, that the comments that the Dixie Chicks made about President Bush brought them to the forefront. But yes, I would say we are. But we've been following these three women and this show that they put on, which has them rubbing, themselves on the mic stand. There's a part of the show where the man in the middle is the Natalie Maines. Is that her name?
I think she's the lead singer. Yeah.
She bends over and she rubs her rear end on the butt of the other girl who's playing the fiddle.
Well, maybe that's some kind of a harmless dance, but
Mr. Henry.
But the point I'm trying to make is that you say their show is smutty, and the things you're describing to me seem more artistic.
Well, until you know what it is that you're talking about.
But you've never seen the show.
I have said to you that I have a great many friends who have.
All right, hold on. 1-800-449-8686. Yvette, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, my only comment is to this gentleman is, how can he possibly say all these things about these women, and he hasn't seen the show?
Well, wait a second. I don't need to stick my you-know-what into a meat grinder to know that it's going to hurt.
But you know what? But that's the whole thing. Now, see, there you go. You-know-what. Is that not in a form of artistic expression that you just utilize
right
there?
No, ma'am, I'm trying to be respectful of the fact that I'm on a radio station. I'm not going to say the word.
Right, but at the same time, here's a perfect example. You're attacking the Dixie Chicks, but you don't even know their names or who they are.
I know Natalie Maines is the lead singer, and she's the one that allegedly rubs herself on the mic stand.
Well, the lady's making a point. You haven't seen this.
Mr. Hendry, I can't look at every filthy act out there. We've got a clearinghouse.
No, you're right, but you can make a comment and a statement about every filthy act, but you can't say anything? That doesn't make any sense.
No, The Dixie Chicks made a big comment about President Bush being a piece of you-know-what, or they were afraid that he was born in Texas. Well, I've been following the Dixie Chicks for 4 years, and we're familiar with their stage act as being you're up to your ears in filth when you walk in there.
But you've been watching the Dixie Chicks for 4 years.
Yes, we have been following them.
But at no point whatsoever have you ever seen the show, but you the right to make the comment about freedom of speech and a comment made.
Yes.
So do you not think that you're taking it out of proportion, the context of what they said, to make this a bigger issue for your own personal agenda?
No, ma'am, because every other music genre has brought sex into the music because the record industry is in the toilet, the rap and the pop and all of the other nonsense. No one wants to buy it. And here come these
Dixie
Chicks. Huh?
But that seems to be like discriminatory remarks on the rap and the pop. Are they not artists as well as everybody else?
Well, what
was everybody saying about the sexual content of Elvis Presley? And
well,
look at him now. He's a legend.
Elvis Presley was a pill-popping. He had diarrhea or whatever he had, that problem with his colon. These guys are...
Can we... you know what? If I could jump in here, Mr. Weierman, because I think, you're maybe drifting a little bit.
All right.
The lady is saying something that I think is the absolute core of this argument. You can't criticize or censor if you haven't seen it, and you represent, I must say, a great many people in the country today who want things censored that they've never seen.
I don't need to see it because I know you can smell garbage a mile away, Mr. Hendry. You don't have to run up to the pile and start sifting through it for T-bones.
So it's okay for us to say that you're not a good attorney and that your statements are incorrect and that your reputation isn't good, considering the fact I've never met you, but it's all right for me to go publicly and say that?
Of course not, because you don't know.
But that's what you're doing with the Dixie Chicks, but
it doesn't apply
to them.
Ma'am, you can't say that Harvey Weierman walks into a courtroom and takes his clothes off
and you're saying that about the Dixie Chicks and you haven't seen them.
No, wait a second. What you're saying is that you can't make a comment about me, even though you don't know me. And I'm
but that's
saying
what,
that
but
have
that's
you ever
what
heard
doing with have, reference to the Dixie Chicks.
Because people have you ever heard that Harvey Weinman went into a courtroom and stuck his bare butt in the judge's face? No.
But even if I heard it, I'm not going to make an assumption.
Exactly.
For it.
Exactly. I could start that rumor right now, and
exactly.
Yeah, and people might start saying Harvey Weinman, attorney of San Marino, California, strips in the courtroom. And they might just bar you. They might have you
exactly.
put away.
Country
exactly.
music. Look at country.
But you know what you're doing? The bottom line is you're making them more famous than what they already
man,
are,
and
you're helping that out.
No, Jesus H. Christ. I said to the.
Just look at that. Look at the language you just used.
What?
What language is that? Jesus H. Christ.
Well, you know something. That's the name of the Christian God, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's said in a slang and
exactly.
angry way.
Country music is dead in the water. So Dixie Chicks have found a way to sell records, and that's by bending over and showing everything. And
well, I don't know what you mean. Yvette, I want to thank you for your call.
But the lady misunderstands.
Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. 1-800-449-8686. And let's go over to Christine. Christine, you're on the Phil Henry Show with Harvey Weinman.
Hello?
Go ahead, ma'am.
Hi, Harvey.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, I just want to say I cannot disagree more with you. I've seen the Dixie Chicks show. It's been televised on Much Music.
Uh-huh.
And it's quite a decent family show, and it's quite entertaining.
On the television, of course. I'm talking about the private performances that they give for people in these large arenas.
And every single, and I read the newspapers after the shows the next day, and every single qualified and reputable editor gives them great reviews.
Of course.
No one has mentioned, you're the first person.
Let me ask you a question then. Why is it when the Dixie Chicks go on the TV, it's pay-per-view? The reason is because of the underwear and this nonsense.
Well, wait a minute. The reason why it's pay-per-view is because the Dixie Chicks command a fairly high price to be seen.
Wait a second. Who is the greatest singer that ever was?
I don't know.
Well, it's Frank Sinatra. I could see him on television for free any GD day I wanted to.
And their shows are not censored in any ways. Not at all.
But the Dixie Chicks are seen. And you can't sniff a show of theirs unless you've got about $68 for the pay-per-view. So Christine...
Look at Christine's been to the show. She's seen the Dixie Chicks. There's no pornography, right, Christine?
No.
There is no nudity.
No, it's a family show.
Well, is there suggestive dancing? Does anybody rub themselves in a...
No, I don't know what show Harvey's been looking at. Oh, if it's just making all this stuff up, it just sounds ludicrous.
I'm not making... Have you ever seen Minnie Pearl grab herself down there? No, you haven't. But the Ducks and Clucks, or the Dixie...
I mean, they're certainly more trendy than the,
that's what I'm talking
traditional.
About.
Well, just because they're trendy doesn't mean that they're grabbing themselves.
No, no. What I'm saying is I think you're stretching this. Yes, they're more trendy, and they're fresher, younger approach.
Are you...
But I don't see them...
Uh-huh. Well, can I ask you a question, dear? Are you from the United States of America?
No, I'm from Toronto, Canada.
Ah, well, you see, Canada's way more permissive with what they allow in the theater. Down here, you can't go for that. Canadians will put up with a guy standing on stage singing a hillbilly song and spreading it for everybody. But down here, Americans don't like that.
Well, if Americans don't like it, they're selling out the Dixie... And by the way, their name is Dixie Chicks, not the Dixoy Chicks.
Mr. Henry...
I don't mean to be disrespectful, sir, but I've heard you mispronounce it. Thank you, Christine, for your call.
Okay, you're welcome.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. Mr. Harvey Weinman, a media watchdog attorney, says the Dixie Chicks stage show is pornographic and is warning people to stay away from it tonight in Greenville, South Carolina. Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
That son of a bitch told me that.
All right, well, we're back on the air. 1-800-449-8686. Harvey Weinman, media watchdog attorney. claiming that the Dixie Chicks show is a pornographic show and that it is a program that a show that needs to be monitored, and that the Dixie Chicks being unpatriotic is just the beginning of their problems. And we are taking phone calls. You've never seen one of their shows, and yet you have cited sources of other people. Who else has seen the Dixie Chicks show and claimed that it's a pornographic show?
Well, people, Phil, whose opinions that other people respect. I'm talking about Art Waterhouse, who writes an entertainment column in Las Vegas. Dorian Fisher, who's the broadcast critic for the Web Newspaper Syndicate. Betty Firestone of the Union Press. And there are others. People are beginning to realize that
the Dixie Chicks.
I'm sorry, I had a stroke 3 years ago. The Dancing Chicks controversy isn't going to go away because there's so much filth underneath the veneer of these women.
All right, the 1-800-449-8686. Walter, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show. Walter, turn that radio down for me. Let me go over to Kiana. Kiana, go ahead.
All right.
Would you have that gentleman turn his radio down? Go ahead, Kiana.
First of all, it's the Dixie Chicks. It's not whatever
I understand, but it's difficult for me to form certain words because of a stroke that I had.
Okay. Well, second of all, you're sitting here talking about how provocative they are, yet did you see Britney Spears and the rest of those girls, Christina Aguilera, other artists, stripping half of their clothes off on their CD covers, when on the front of a Dixie Chicks CD cover you see feet?
Well, dear, first of all, Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera are a far sight nicer to look at, I think, than the
Well, that's
the
your own personal opinion,
all right,
just because they're nicer. Just because they're nicer to look at.
You know, the little fat one in the middle. But
forget about how the women look. Now you're being sexist on top of everything else.
Exactly.
It doesn't really
matter how they look. The Dixie Chicks' faces are beautiful, and they top Britney Spears. And Britney Spears, half of her body is fake, and that's probably why you like it. These girls are totally natural, and all they want to do is perform.
And I think they're attractive women. And
you like them large like that?
Personally, yes, but that's got nothing to do with what we're talking about.
It has nothing to do with your situation.
What we're talking about here, sir.
You're sitting here, sir. You're telling us.
Look, young girls want to emulate the Dixie Chicks, and how are these parents going to feel when their daughters come home from a Dixie concert and they want to go to school with no underwear on?
It's not that they're going to do that. Kids don't do that. I mean, yes, kids go to school. They look at Britney Spears. How do kids explain why they want to wear absolutely no clothes? I think no underwear is better than no clothes.
Well, my point is that the Britney Spears is a tasteful and artistic dance rendition, and it's not just rubbing your butt on a mic stand.
You don't even know you.
Yeah.
I've gone to a show. Just because you've heard about it, there's a lot of rumors that go around that people hear about.
Okay.
That's how rumors get started.
Well,
but you know what? I've been to a show, so you might want to check your sources.
All right, let me ask you a question, because this is how it happens. When you went to that Dixie Chick show, did you go to the ladies' room?
Yes.
Okay. At the time you were in the ladies' room, she could have been rubbing her big butt on that mic stand.
I think my friends would have told me.
Yeah.
Well, why would they tell you? Because it's part of the show.
Why wouldn't they tell me? Well, they would have said something because they know that's not the Dixie Chicks' behavior.
Look, I don't know.
You're hearing rumors and you're going off what you hear. Maybe you need to actually go to a concert, pay the money, whether you like the band or not, and see it for yourself that you're making no sense.
And the other thing is that I think you made a very good point, Kyan, about Britney and about Christina Aguilera and Pink or whoever you want to mention being women who are far more sexually charged.
Well, wait a second. When you talk about Pink or any of the Dixlin chicks go on stage together like a bunch of lesbians. You see what I'm saying?
How about Britney Spears and the rest of the dancers dance on their guys?
At least it's heterosexual sex and not three butterhogs.
So now, not only are you being sexist, you're being racist towards gays and lesbians.
Exactly.
Racist towards gays? Well, huh?
You just said it's okay for a guy and a girl to be up on stage doing that, but it's not okay for two girls.
Wait a second. Are you trying to tell me that you want to see two guys going at it like Adam and Steve?
I never said anything.
In the love dance?
Wait, but I never said anything about two guys.
Well, I will tell you that the Dixie Chicks going at it like they're having sex in an alley behind a rendering plant in my mind, is
what have you seen that happen before?
Oh,
have
boy.
You seen that happen before?
What?
Have you seen the Dixie Chicks getting it on before? No, you haven't, because you've never been to a show.
Exactly. Kayetta, thank you for your call. 1-800-449-8686. Walter, go ahead.
Yeah, this guy needs his watchdog license taken away from him. Because he's totally not in touch with whatever the hell he's talking about.
Oh, you sound like a real country music fan.
No, I'm not. Hey, I'm going to tell you, I'm not even a country western fan. But I tell you what, I do know the Dixie Chicks. I have heard their music, and I happen to like some of it. She just spoke her mind, which is being American, and which I think that you're not being, because for one, you tell that other lady, because she's from Canada, and you're going to speak for me and tell me that the Americans don't like what they do. You're not speaking for me. I'm American, okay?
Well, wait a second.
Born and raised here.
It's the Dixon Chicks. They get up on
stage. No. First of all, you don't even need to be talking. It's the Dixie Chicks. And if you can't remember that, you need to quit trying to be a watchdog. You need to go watch something else, something that you can remember.
That's a good point. You can't even remember that.
I told you that, but it's difficult for me to form the word.
I don't care. If it's difficult for you to form the words, then you don't need to be discussing the words then.
Well, I'll tell you.
It's that simple.
These two,
you know, your watchdog license need to be revoked because you're out of touch with everything. Okay?
Sir, are you a father?
Yes, I'm a father.
All right. Do you want your daughter, looking at the Dixie Chicks? Do you want them to go and see them? And with the little fat one in the middle, they look like a pork loin sandwich.
Well, look, that's beside the point. If my daughters are old enough to make up their mind what they want to see, if they didn't like that stuff, that would be up to them. And if I didn't like it, that would be up to me. But for you to be sitting up there talking the stupid stuff that you're talking about, it's just plain. You really ought to hear yourself. You're really making yourself sound stupid.
Sir, the Duxleys have a thong full of $1 bills by the end of the show.
You know what? And just because if anybody were to hear all this stuff, matter of fact, I'm a truck driver. If I could be in where they're performing
there
at,
in Greensville,
I would go just behind your stupidness.
Wait a second. Every dollar you give to the dangling chicks, they're going to the...
Now it's the dangling chicks. Why did you... It's called the Dixie Chicks, because they come from the South.
Well, I don't care where they come from.
Both of you guys are really starting to tighten my jaws.
Well, you know what? I hope your jaws lock up on you, because there's something definitely wrong with you.
What's wrong with me? All I'm trying to say is that these women are up on stage hunching a mic stand.
No. You go on by. You said you haven't even seen this. I have seen them perform, and that ain't the kind. That's
well,
not even where they're from. You ain't going to even get me to believe no joke like
can
that.
Can I tell you,
and I'm trying to be nice. I'm trying to be nice to
I
you.
I appreciate that, but listen, I want to tell both you guys something.
What?
I want to tell you, Phil, and you, Walter, something. That for the last 45 minutes...
Uh-huh.
I've been putting you on because I'm actually the president of the Los Angeles area Dixie Chicks fan club, and I'm just trying to promote their show tonight.
You need a whooping.
What?
You need a whooping. That's what you need.
You want to kick my ass?
Yeah, no, I'd like to kick your ass.
I don't necessarily want to kick your ass, but you need a whooping.
Why? Why? Because I'm a Duckley chick? Fan?
Duckley
no,
chick.
Because you get all, because you're in that.
Yeah, that's all you did. For 45 minutes, you shoveled horse manure.
Yeah, I just pulled over from trying to make a living.
Hey, Walter,
and somebody's not going to get what they got coming because of you.
Listen to this. It's my favorite Duxley chick song. Wide open spaces, room to make a big mistake. Yeah,
he costs me money.
What
I'm not
an idiot! Right. This guy is putting me on for 40 minutes.
Wide open spaces, Walter. Fred Burnaman. Oh, I gotta go to the bathroom.
Would you please check out these guests first before you put them on my show for 45 minutes? The Dixie Chicks hunch a mic stand on stage. The guy's the president of the Los Angeles area Dixie Chicks fan club. Then he sings Wide Open Spaces like he's still having that stroke. 1-800-449-8686. Hey, Walter, what is the name of that group?
That's the Darkie Chicks.
The Darkie Chicks now. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. Rather be playing Grand Theft Auto. The Phil Henry Show is back.
By the way, that was me doing the voice of that guy, Harvey Wireman, in that bit. The people who call believe him to be a real guy. That's kind of the thing we do. That's the big bookend of a thing that we do on the Phil Henry Show. There's a lot of other stuff we do, but that's what makes us stand out. Excuse me for putting it that way. That's what makes us just sort of poke through the door in the morning. Our number is 1-800-449-8686. And don't forget, our website is philhenryshow.com. Our souvenir shop is in our website. Mother's Day coming up, Father's Day coming up. You won't need any other shopping once you go to our website and see all of the wonderful gifts that we have there, including our Citizens Auxiliary Police travel mug. And we have a Western Estate spa robe. So go to our website and check it out. Well, the process is finally coming to an end. Yes, a process that began back in September of 2001, a couple of weeks after 9/11, when some very nice people from NBC came here to our studios in Sherman Oaks and said, "Would you write a script for us?" And I said, "Okay." Now, it's funny because everybody in radio that I know, they don't know how TV works. And I didn't know how TV worked until I started working in it. They have absolutely no clue, and most of the listeners don't. What happens is they have you write a script, and then they approve it, and then they take it back, and then they have some more notes, and then they approve it, and then they make you do another script, and then if they like that, then you do a pilot, and if they like the pilot, then you have a TV series. And they put the pilot through all kinds of testing. Well, all of that takes about a year and a half, right up to the point that we're at now. And very soon, we'll find out. Now, I told you guys from day one, and I haven't changed my story, that the chances of us getting a TV show on the air are slim to none. Now, that's just the way it is for any show, for any pilot that's produced, any script, slim to none. That's why I'm not quitting any day jobs around here. I got my radio gig forever. Just so you know how it works, and you can say, "Well, I heard Phil tell me about it, so I know exactly now how the TV business works," instead of a lot of that crap you hear about whatever it is you're hearing. You know, some of these cats, they quit their gig, they go off, they do a TV show, 3 weeks later, the thing's canceled. Not me. Not the kid. So, you know, what I'm anticipating is about a week and a half, they'll make it official. The official, what I've always known, which is they're not going to put our show on the air. Here's one of the reasons why I feel that way. Besides the fact that it's a long shot to get anything on the air, a Phil Henry Show is an even longer shot. And the reason for that is, if you've listened to me for any length of time, or even if you just listened to this last hour radio we did, you know that we do something. We don't operate with all of our freaking ball bearings exactly spinning the right way. You know, we got one leg in the Tascadero, man. They're ready to strap us to a freaking gurney and throw us in that soft truck. We're nuts. And that is necessitated by the fact that 3 hours a day we got to come up with creative radio. I don't just walk in here and start reading the newspaper. I want to do something different. So we're very different. The show is very different. And any TV show that I would involve myself in would have to be something of a different kind of television show. Otherwise, I had no interest. And I told NBC that from the very start. And they, being great people, they respected that. And they said, "Yeah, we want to see what you can do. We want to see what you have, what your idea would be." Well, that's nice of them, but the reality is, even though they're great people and everybody's working hard because everybody's got to make a living. The reality is television doesn't really do different all that well. They don't really, for the most part, know what to do with a guy like me. Because my instincts run contrary to prime time. See what I'm saying? So, for instance, I'll give you an example. 3-4 years ago, I heard people tell me, people who were geniuses in the TV business in this town saying, oh, your show's cable, man. If we ever put your show on television, it would have to be cable. I get the picture, man. I get the message, you know. Which is fine. I've never wanted a career in TV. They came to me. I wrote a script. So not only is it a long shot, it's a double long shot for a guy like me because what we have created is kind of, it's not a typical sitcom. It's not a jokey sitcom. It's a situational kind of sitcom. The humor comes from the situations, and the humor comes from the satire. And I'll tell you, anything that Phil Henry is going to do is just going to naturally make any television executive kind of scratch his head. It's just the way it's going to be. And that's even after they get their hands on it and they want to rewrite this or rewrite that. Not knocking it. I'm saying they know what works best for TV. I know what works best for me on the radio. And the two things don't always fit together. So we'll find out. But I'm going to tell you, I am not anticipating anything other than a no. Not because I am not a positive thinking guy, but I'm a realist. I've always believed this from the very beginning. Realistically, a Phil Henry created and produced sitcom has got a very slim chance of making it in commercial television because commercial TV does a certain thing, and it's completely contrary in many ways to what I'm interested in doing. But I will tell you this, I am grateful as hell to NBC for giving me the shot, for letting us at least put this on paper and put it and film it. And that says a hell of a lot for those great people over there. And they are great people, seriously. But when we get the official no, I'll let you know. But I don't expect anything other than that. Besides, how am I going to do a TV show and a radio show? I like this too much. I have so much fun. I can drink, come on the air. I can do my show in my bare feet. You know, right now, you don't know whether am I standing on my head or not. You don't know. I may be at home right now. Maybe I'm out in the middle of a street someplace in a van. You don't know. And you'll never know. Maybe I'm nude. Maybe I'm looking like one of the Dixie Chicks. All right, 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686. Now, Phil Henry.
Hello, Channel 19 has been conducting some public service campaigns, ads, especially now with drinking and driving, with college graduation coming up and proms. Don Berman joins us from the Channel 19. You're in the news van right now, Don?
I am, Phil, and we'll be on assignment for a couple of hours right now.
Tell us a little bit about the drinking and driving campaign at Channel 19.
It is a far-reaching campaign, and it's doubly important for me. I have a teenage son and a teenage daughter, and anchoring the news, I see some horrible, horrible accidents. I am one of the few anchors in the country who actually goes out on assignment, and I do see some horrible things. I see firsthand what drinking and driving can do. The horror of a family torn apart by a drunk driver is inexplicable.
And yet it goes on generation after generation.
Also, Phil, the other thing is it's tough for people to understand that while we encourage our young people and our young adults to get a designated driver, we also need for them to understand that there are certain professions and certain people who do need to drink and drive because the demands of the job make it necessary to drink and drive. And how do you deliver that message to a young person? How do you say, I don't want you drinking and driving, you can kill yourself, and yet also say, I need to drink and drive because of the demands.
Well, when you say people who need to drink and drive, who are you talking about?
Well, a few of the people. I can give you an example from my own industry. And Now, I don't want you to misunderstand me, Phil, because most people do. I do not encourage drinking and driving. I want to make that very clear. And at Channel 19, we have invested tens of thousands of dollars in billboards and campaigns across the Los Angeles area to discourage drinking and driving. But as I was telling you, I go out on assignment. And when we roll on a news story that involves the death of a child or violence toward women, it is very difficult to deal with the magnitude of that without steadying your nerves with a drink and without trying to calm yourself down with a drink.
So you do you drink when you go out on the news story? Are you driving?
I do drive, Phil, because generally I'm paged at home and time is of the essence. So I will drive to the story. And I'll meet the news crew there.
Well, why don't you have somebody else? If you're saying that you need to drink and drive because of the horror of the story you're going to, why don't you have someone else drive?
Well, first of all, it's impossible on a short notice. And again, as a newsman, this is part, in some respects, of the job. What I want to do more than anything else is to assure people that this isn't the drinking and driving that they are afraid of. We are news people, and we're drinking to steady our nerves. I'm talking about the drinking and driving of young people that kills people, the drinking and driving of college students, the drinking and driving of just the average citizen. So, again, when I say that I drink and drive, it's because I am involved in a profession where we see death, and we see dying, and we see injury every day.
Well, first of all, my hat's off to you to be one of the few anchors who does go out and do his own stories, because very few news anchors even write their own news anymore.
I'm one of maybe a half a dozen in the Los Angeles area, and nationally I know of about 20 other news anchors, both men and women, who write their own news.
But where are you drinking? So, and I don't want to harp on this.
I understand that, Phil.
But since you say there is a big difference between drinking and driving, and drinking and driving, that's a necessity for your job. Where are you drinking? Is it at home? Is it in the car?
When I get the call, Phil, it is sometimes necessary to just jump in the car and meet the camera crew at the location of a story and get on the air so I can have the story on the air. So I keep in my glove box, and this is not all the time, but I will keep in the glove box a flask because it'll have either bourbon or vodka in it. But again, people need to know that this is the drinking and driving that is necessary, and I don't want them misunderstanding that it is a dangerous thing to do if you're not working on a job that's necessitating it.
So you're drinking from a flask while you're driving?
Yes. I'll be going over questions I'll ask and trying to get my head together for the story and trying to settle myself down and not be so emotional when I get there, because you don't know what you're going to face. Is it a dead child? Is it a fire? Is it a horrible thing? So I will take just a couple of sips from a flask of bourbon, and I'll put it back in the glove back in the glove box, and that way I can steady my nerves.
What kind of a news story? Well, you just said so. The death of a child. I imagine all news people engage in this.
Oh, absolutely, Phil.
So all news people are drinking somewhat on the job.
Absolutely. I imagine any one of the major news anchors in Los Angeles or around the country haven't had at least one drink before they go on the air, especially if they've been out on assignment. But this kind of story, I'll give you an example from early in my career.
All right, well, hold on to that. I want to give our phone number out, 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. We're a rare opportunity to talk to Don Berman. He's the anchor of the Channel 19 News at 10. And we're talking about a drinking and driving public service campaign that they are conducting at Channel 19. Kind of difficult because Don is saying that there are some professions where you do need to drink and drive, his, a newsman, being one of them. So how do you tell kids don't drink and drive while you need to for your job? 1-800-449-8686. So Don, tell me, you were early in your career?
Yeah, well, early on in my, I'll give you an example. This is what I learned from older newsmen, what you had to do to survive in this business. And I was told to go out and cover and do a report on the L.A. County Fair. The 4-H exhibits were what they wanted me to cover, and I knew what this meant. I'd be witnessing animals paraded in front of humans in the most demeaning manner, forced to do tricks, hamster and guinea pig, blue ribbon judging, knowing that those animals would be shipped off to market for sandwich meat right after the show. And that's when I took my first drink, and it's been something that I carry with me to this day.
Because that experience was traumatic.
Because that experience was very traumatic. And also because I knew that it would help me get through what I what I had to do.
So there are professions where drinking and driving is necessary.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's the challenge we have as parents. How do we tell our young people, don't drink and drive while you have a hip flask in your glove compartment? And what I say to my daughter is, I need this for my work. Someday you might need it for your work, but until that day comes, you are not to get behind the wheel of a car after you've had something to drink. And again, the profession where it's necessary, whether you're a doctor who may be rushing to a woman's home to perform a tracheotomy without anesthetic, you need a drink to steady your nerves, all of these things.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. I want to get into some of those professions. Say a doctor who has to perform a tracheotomy without anesthetic?
Yes.
He would need a drink to steady his nerves.
Oh, absolutely, because what you have is a patient. You have to slit a hole in their throat and get a tube down it, and you're doing it without anesthetic. So you have to hold them down while they're screaming from the pain of cutting a hole in their throat. I don't know of any man that could face that without taking a drink.
All right, let me go over here to Lori. Lori, you're on the Phil Henry Show with Don Berman from Channel 19. Lori? Or Leslie, I'm sorry, Leslie.
Yes.
Yes, go ahead, ma'am.
I am just appalled that this gentleman thinks that his job necessitates him drinking at all, much less drinking and driving. I know a lot of people that deal with death.
I am not in favor of drinking and driving.
But your job doesn't necessitate you doing that. There's a lot of people who are going to that same call of that same injured child or dead child, and they're not drinking on their way to that call.
They don't need to communicate that story. I want to be clear. I am completely against drinking and driving.
You use the word necessitate. That's a necessity.
Yes. My job, I've got to take a drink.
That's unbelievable.
Well, I would suggest you ride along with me some night on some of the calls. I'm the most trusted.
What about the police officer that's going to that call, and he goes to those calls as often, if not way more often than you?
Because,
is he drinking on
no,
his way there?
No, because he can handle that as a police officer. I'm a newsman. I am a civilian. And I'm reporting to the people.
He's a human being, and you're a human being.
Yes,
and
but he needs to have the steady nerves to do what he's doing. He may have a gun or whatever. I need to have steady nerves so I can report clearly and accurately. And
so I want to be clear.
Police officers have training for that, too.
I just want to be clear. So you've got a flask in the glove box of your car when you're going to do a story for Channel 19. You're drinking out of that on your way to the story.
Well, you're making it sound as if I'm getting intoxicated. I am not. I'm taking a couple of sips to steady my nerves. I am, and believe me, I don't know how I got this, but the poll in L.A. Magazine, I'm the most trusted face on Southern California television. When a story breaks, it's me that they want to hear it from. That's a lot of responsibility, and I need a drink to be able to...
I think you need to find another job.
Why would I need another job when I make so much money at the one that I'm doing, and I'm very successful at it?
Well, you're
ridiculous.
Not successful if you have to drink to do it and endanger other people.
Well, I understand the lady. If you're a teetotaler, that's fine. But there are some of us who aren't so skittish.
All right. Thank you, Leslie. Thank you for your call. 1-800-449-8686. Don Berman is with us from Channel 19 News on their big campaign against drinking and driving, although he says it's tough to tell a kid not to drink and drive when there are some professions where you need to drink and drive, like being a newsman going to a scene of an accident or some story where it could be very traumatic. He goes to a lot of assignments on the site, and he drinks from a hip flask that he keeps in the glove box of his car. 1-800-449-8686. Yeah, Don, you want to say something?
I just wanted to add, I'm capable of drinking and driving because I'm capable of multitasking. Many people are not. But when I drink and I'm driving to the scene of a story, by the time I get there, I know exactly the questions I want to ask. I know exactly what I want to say on the air.
All right, hold on for a second. Don Berman, always good to have him with us from Channel 19's News at 10. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686. Controlled by the International Jewish Media Conspiracy.
1-800-449-8686. And now more on The Phil Hendry Show.
Don Berman is with us. Don is with the Channel 19 News. We're talking about drinking and driving. Drinking and driving is wrong, but you do it in your job because it's necessary.
Well, it's very much like saying to someone, don't play with guns. Don't go into the closet and take out that gun. You don't know what you're doing with it. You're going to kill yourself. Guns are very dangerous. And yet there are times when you may need one. Drinking and driving is very much the same, and what we're trying to tell people at Channel 19 News is, if you're going to drink and drive, be sure you're doing it on your way to a necessary job, on your way to a job that you'll need that drink, and certainly don't abuse it. But if you're a young person, certainly do not.
Well, you said you don't believe in drinking and driving.
And I do not.
All right, so, but newsmen and firemen and cops?
I think there are some professions, doctors and firefighters are the ones that come to my mind.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. Kelvin, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, sir, go ahead.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to make a comment. I play music in bars at night. I'm a musician, and I am strongly against drinking and driving. And this gentleman you're talking to, this news anchor gentleman, he's very wrong in the way he's thinking. In my opinion, he's got double standards.
Well, Kelvin, this is Don Berman. I'm very happy you called. I'm a newsman, what that means is I'm not only just on the air, I go out and cover the stories. And I was at a 4-H exhibit, as I mentioned, I've had to cover most of the county fairs here, one of the state fairs.
What about that causes you to drink?
Well, first of all, you're seeing animals abused. You're seeing animals paraded and humiliated in front of humans. It's very, very traumatic.
And the point I want to make, sir, is that if you feel like you have to drink to get control of yourself for your profession, I'm afraid you're in the wrong profession. You're supposed to be a professional.
Well, sir,
and that means you're supposed to be able to do your job.
Well, with all due respect.
And if you can't do your job without drinking, maybe you need to call a cab to get to your job.
I don't know what you mean. I mean, look, you don't have a job where it's necessary to drink and drive. You play a guitar in a bar. I report to millions of people. I think there's a little bit of a difference there.
Well, you can report to millions of people. You can do it sober.
Well, I can tell you this much. I have been co-anchoring with Donna Kaufman for the last 15 years, and they asked me to work with her. I said, yes, I would work with her. I didn't want to, but I did. And for 15 years, I have gone into that studio and sat down next to that woman. And I can tell you, Kelvin, that no man alive could do that without taking a drink.
Are you talking about having strife with a coworker?
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, if you live in a glass house, you don't throw rocks. And to me, sir, you live in a glass house and throwing rocks.
I'm saying don't drink and drive unless you work in news.
Excuse me. You're fighting a campaign against drinking and driving, and then you'll get in your car and have a drink on the way to the story.
Yes, because
I need it.
I have to go back to a studio and look at her and do the news story.
You're drinking and driving because the stories you're going to suck.
I don't drink and drive.
I'll tell you this, Kelvin, you don't need to. You work in a bar. You're staying in one place. I'm all over the city before I go on the air at 10.
All right, Kelvin, thank you for your call. 1-800-449-8686. You're now adding into this the fact that you work with someone.
Look, Donna Kaufman, Phil, is a wonderful professional. She's one of the top news anchors in the business. She's worked for NBC. She's worked for CBS. It just happens that I don't like her. I've never liked her. And I reserve the right to do what I need to do to sit in the same studio next to her while she goes on and on about God knows what.
And that means taking a drink.
That means taking a drink, yes.
All right, Lisa, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello, Lisa.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, good, ma'am.
First of all, I wanted to point out that I was a journalist and I left the industry because I couldn't ask the questions that you're probably asking or see the things that you're seeing. However, I don't condone, but I... However, though, you know, as a mother, as a human being, as someone who has had a brother in treatment, I don't condone any drinking and driving. I don't condone any drug use, alcohol use, any substance abuse of any kind to go do a job. There are millions of people out there that are, and I...
Well, how am I supposed to do it? I don't understand.
Well, you know, I don't know, but there are people that are popping Valium and popping Xanax and popping Vicodin,
yes,
and all of these things to do.
Absolutely.
The lawyer that goes into court, the fireman that runs into a building, an accountant that goes to do taxes for big companies like Enron, and
then
they know their heads on.
Then you know what I'm talking about.
But I, because I'm a drug rep and I hear these stories from doctors, but I still don't think that that gives you, you know, it's still a dangerous situation to put the people in the public in.
Can I make this point, Phil, because I think it's very
yes.
important. Lisa today is in another profession, and she could very well be in the news profession, but she didn't want to take a drink. I take a drink so I can stay in this profession. And
so you have to drink, Mr. Berman, in order to stay in this profession. And I think
are you saying Dan Rather takes a drink? Tom Brokaw takes a drink?
I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if they did. And I'll tell you something.
I'd be horrified.
You were in the business. You know what it's like to work with some of these prima donnas. Donna Kaufman, who's one of these... Okay. Can I use the B-I-T-C-H word, Mr. Henry?
I'd rather you didn't.
Well, man, I'll tell you what. I have got to take a couple of good knocks of vodka before I can sit down next to her and do a half-hour newscast.
What's wrong with her?
She's a prima donna. She's a thief because I was supposed to have gotten the last bump in the contract negotiations. She got it. And she
do you think it's because of your drinking and what you're talking about right now, and maybe they think you're a risk factor?
Yeah, it could be. You're talking on the air about drinking.
No. Donna Kaufman thinks she's the star of the 10 o'clock news, and it's a lie.
It's a vain business.
Well, if I didn't take a drink before going in there, I might take a swing at her. And that's what I'm worried about.
Anger management.
Yeah, you need anger management, dude. I mean, there's a lot of stuff.
Oh, anger management. Why don't you anger manage this? You know, all of the things that I've tried to do in my...
All right, hold on for a minute. 1-800-449-8686. We're talking with Don Berman of the Channel 19 News at 10. He says drinking and driving is wrong, as we all believe, but for newsmen, drinking and driving is necessary because of the horrible things that they see. He also feels he has the right to take a drink on the job because his co-anchor in the news, Donna Kaufman, is a B-I-T-C-H. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
With Don Berman from Channel 19 News at 10. Don, you're talking about drinking and driving. It's a wrong thing to do, but you feel that you should be allowed to, as other newsmen should be allowed to, because you think there are professions that need it.
There are professions where drinking and driving, Phil, is absolutely necessary.
Well, in a minute, I want to mention something that came up at the scene of a news story when you arrived that got you into some hot water with the L.A. County Fire Department.
And I know the story you're talking about, Phil. It is hearsay.
Well, all right. Before we get to that, I need to take another call here. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. Let's go over to Johnny. Hello?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
I can't believe that you needed a drink to get you through the 4-H Club exhibit. Thank God you didn't have to, go cover the
I think animals being abused is traumatic.
Yeah, that you're looking for an excuse to drink, and they have a place you can go for that. It's called Alcoholics Anonymous. I cover accidents every day. That's what I do. Is deal fatalities every day.
What do you
and
do? What
from
do you
a
do,
professional
sir?
Standpoint,
what do you
you're
do?
Just not.
What do you do?
What do I do? I do my job. I go in.
No, what is your profession?
Job.
What is your profession?
I'm an accident investigator for a trucking company.
Well, have you ever seen a flock of sheep being paraded off to market by a 10-year-old child? Do you think that that's something you can keep your... You know something? You may find it very humorous, Johnny, but if
you
I report to people, you don't have
you
to...
You are a gentleman looking for an excuse to drink. It's okay for you, but hey, the rest of the world...
It is necessary for me to drink and drive.
It is necessary for the LAPD to pull you over and arrest you for DUI. I can't believe that the station would condone a person like you.
I'm not necessarily condoning this. I think that, what Mr. Berman, what you're saying is that you don't like kids drinking and driving, but some professions need it.
I have to. When I'm racing to the scene where a child has been burned, third-degree burns, I need to take a couple of blasts. Wouldn't you?
The same thing for the billy goat with the, you know, with the blue bonnet on for winning. I mean, geez, you know.
All right,
what's the next reason?
I got a story here. You were covering. I'm sorry, but you were covering a double accident. It was two deaths in an accident on the Hollywood Freeway that you went to the scene of. This was back in April.
Bill, this story has been reported and debunked.
All right, but it's, did you run over two of the body bags?
Oh, my God.
Did you run over two of the body bags?
When I got to the scene, the sheriff had laid those body bags in an area that was unsafe.
You ran over two dead bodies.
Yes, and can I underline the word dead? I didn't kill anyone. I don't know what the gentleman's laughing at, but I can tell you that I went through no end of crap dealing with that for 3 months.
Well,
were you arrested?
Arrested for what? Hit and run on a dead body?
Well, obviously you slammed a couple back before you got there. I mean, you know.
Yes, so who's to know?
Was there any sign of any improprieties of your drinking?
You know, I can hear the laugh in your voice, and it's pissing me off.
And, Wait a second.
Quite frankly, you're pissing me off.
I'm pissing you off.
I'm out here trying to protect people.
I didn't.
And you're the guy who's out there, you know, running over kids.
I didn't run over. I didn't run over any children. I ran over two body bags with dead bodies in them.
Jesus!
I can't believe this guy.
Thank you very much.
I had to wipe the tears from my eyes when I pulled up to the scene, and they were blocking my vision, and so that was difficult for me to see.
Well, the sheriff said you pulled up, the car fishtailed, and it went over two body bags with bodies in them.
Yeah. So what's your point?
What's my point? You're pulling up to the scene of a news story. We also have a tape of you, and we're going to get to it here in a couple of minutes, of one of your reports.
I hope you do, Phil. I'm proud of my work.
I don't know if they're going to be proud of this one.
Well, excuse me. If you want to turn media critic, that's something else. I'm very proud of my work.
All right. Here is Kevin on the Phil Henry Show. Kevin, go ahead.
Listen, Berman, this is the most asinine thing I've ever heard of. You know, I've been in journalism, and I know the stress involved, and there is no point. It is not helpful to drink. You've got a serious pot problem. You're an alcoholic. You realize that? You need help, man. I can't emphasize enough.
You sound like, I don't believe you were in news.
You don't believe I was in news?
No, you weren't in news.
You want to see my press card, pal?
Press card?
I'm telling you, you don't need to drink in order to do this.
Where did you work?
Where did I work? At the Santa Maria Times, Santa Maria, California.
Listen, Brenda Starr, first of all, I work at a big city news service. I'm not working at the Santa Maria Times. Secondly, the things that I see here are gruesome and grotesque beyond words. What do you see up at the Santa Maria Times? Somebody ran over a cat?
Listen, I'll tell you, I saw plenty of gruesome scenes up there, and the thing is, pal, you're going to see plenty more because they're going to be all over the front bumper of your car if you don't stop drinking and driving.
I don't understand.
I'm sick of it. I'm calling to try and save lives here.
What life are you saving?
Well, all right.
Let me, I'm going to play this. 1-800-449-8686 is our number. I want to play this because this is a recording of you doing one of your reports. Just hold on.
And now we'll go to Don Berman on the scene. Don?
Yeah, man, hit a car the other day.
There it is. What do you think of that?
What's wrong with that?
Oh, yeah, that was really clear and concise, huh?
That's professional work. Now, if you don't mind, happy hour starting over at the smokehouse.
Yeah, you got to get ready for work, huh?
You bet.
1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. Won't float without pontoons.
The Phil Henry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
That was me doing the voice there of Don Berman. News at 10. Sometimes drinking and driving is a necessary part of a profession. And Don, he has himself a few blasts, and then he comes squealing up to a news scene, fishtailing over dead bodies in a body bag, gets out of the car, straightening his tie. He's ready to go. God, that's funny. That's a funny thought. Our website is philhenryshow.com. With every backstage pass, you get access to all of our audio archives, bits like that, other bits that we've done in the past. Let me give an example of what you may find on our website. God, I found this, and I was clearing out some files today, and I thought I would just go ahead and read to you examples of things that are on our website. Dr. Jim Sadler had a new book called Transitions, How to Help Your Loved One Cross Over to the Other Side. Now, you can find this hour on our website, I believe. In this hour, this episode of the Phil Henry Show, Dr. Jim Sadler has come out with a new book that helps the living deal with the almost dead among us. Dr. Sadler has some great ideas on what to do to help your loved ones transition to the next plane. Here are some examples. In an effort to show respect to the long career that Bob Hope has had, lightly tap Bob on the head with one of his Emmys to help him transition to another plane. Or if your loved one liked vintage cars, for instance, perhaps you could get them behind the wheel and push them into the surf in a vintage car. Charlie DeFountain was an ad salesman on Making Your Wedding Count. Charlie is footing the bill for his daughter's upcoming wedding, and quite frankly, he's looking for ways to cut his costs. He has some helpful hints to help recoup some of your losses if you have a wedding coming up. For instance, you could have a raffle, and the winner gets first crack at the bride on wedding night. Number two, have the bridesmaids give lap dances to the guests and split their tips with them. Number three, have the guests' cars detailed while they're at the reception and don't give them their key. Don't give them their keys back until they pay up. Anyway, that's on our website, philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. Hope you enjoy it. And our souvenir shop's open, too. Get those presents for Mom, for Dad, for everybody, for Mother's and Father's Day. We also got an email from our good friend in Alaska. What's that guy's name? Small Bob, and Small Bob is getting pissed off because we don't have the 4X size shirts yet. And he's sick and tired of listening to me talking about how fat I am because he grew an extra size from the last time he sent us an email wanting those new shirts. So all I can tell you, Small Bob, is one guy, and I'm going to make a 4X shirt for one guy. Hey, yeah, how about buying two and sewing them together? Phil, you keep saying you're fat. Bullcrap. You don't know what fat is. You're California fat. Up here, we're Alaska fat. That's a big difference, and it's huge. Where the hell are the 4X shirts? When I started asking, I was a 3X. I ate the steady turkey burger diet like you suggested, and now I'm a 4X on my way to 5X. How about sticking a boot in the ass of the person telling you there isn't any money in selling the larger sizes? Regards, Small Bob. All I can do, Bob, is I can go to Debbie Petrasic and I can say, can we get those 4X Ted's of Beverly Hills shirts, all the shirts? Otherwise, you will have to sew a couple together. All right, 1-800-449-8686. There's some breaking news. In Canada, Prime Minister Jean Chrétien said that his government will propose a bill to decriminalize the possession of small amounts of marijuana. Chrétien drew applause and even a couple of joyful whoops on Tuesday night when he told a fundraising dinner for his Liberal Party that the legislation was coming. The goal, he said, is to prevent young people who smoke a joint from getting a criminal record for the rest of their lives. The law would not legalize marijuana, but would make possessing less than an ounce an offense similar to a traffic violation. So you may soon be able to blast up in Canada and not go away for a long time. So they can't back us up in the war in Iraq, and they're getting high. It's cool. And it's a good point, because who needs it, right? Who needs the cops running around on that stuff? We don't need the cops running around on that stuff. So, you know, the sooner we do that, the sooner we get our thumbs out of our rear ends down here, the better. Because you got man hour after man hour after man hour being devoted to this nonsense, marijuana. And I'm talking about huge dollars going to the DEA and big money going to police agencies and overtime money and stakeouts and this and that. It ain't slowing down anybody. It's not stopping anybody from smoking that stuff. Everybody's smoking it now, by the way. And the whole reason why we even need to legalize it, you realize, is because most of the people smoking it now are lame asses. They're getting busted. Why, back in my day, the weed was plentiful, everybody was cool, nobody got arrested. I'm joking, I don't have any first-hand experience with that. But seriously, there was a time when smoking weed was something you did quietly. You didn't run around and scream about it. You didn't go around wanting to legalize it. Telling people that you got arrested for it. Telling people that you wanted to make a big issue. Just shut up and smoke it. Grow it in your backyard if you have to. Score it from your friends or whoever it is you're buying it from. Don't make a big thing about it. Now we have the chronic. It ain't the weed no more. It's the chronic. And everybody's smoking the weed, and everybody wants it legalized. And now this medicinal marijuana, says who? Says you, because you got a tummy ache? No, my doctor says I need it. Well, have him turn you on then. Jesus. Simple thing. Hey, doc, do you think I need marijuana? Yes, I do. Well, just make with it. Every cop ought to have just a baggie of this stuff. Did I say cop? I meant to say every doctor should have a baggie of this stuff in his briefcase someplace. But the man hours devoted to freaking arresting people for smoking the weed. So up in Canada, they're doing something about it. So good for you guys. You know where you see you got your act together in Canada. We're running around kicking everybody's ass. You're up there. You got your priorities set. You want to make sure the kids don't have a record. Seriously, I'm envious of you. All we ever do is go places, help people, and there isn't a one word of thanks. We're getting our asses kicked for, you know, you smile the wrong way at some people, man. They hate your guts if you got that red, white, and blue, you know. Over there in Iran right now, or what is it, Iraq? I forget where we were now. I forget where we are now, I should say. And what's the name of that town? Falafel? We're in Falafel, which is named after some doughy ball of food, and they don't dig us over there. They're telling us to get our asses out. Why, you know, who needs it? I think we ought to pull out. Leave one aircraft carrier floating in the ocean off of Iraq. No, actually, better yet, one submarine, just floating. We'll pull out of there, and the minute we see anything start, we get any crap from any of them Shiites, any Islamic theocracy thing, in come the tomahawks. Just a reminder, tomahawk a month. Here's a little present from your Uncle Sam. Boom! Yeah! Just a little reminder from the U.S. of A., keep your act together. Wham! Every month, about on the third or fourth of the month, well, we ought to be getting that tomahawk any minute now. Yep, here it comes. Bang! And, you know, or maybe a skywriting jet says, little reminder from Uncle Sam, pull your thumb out of your rear end. That's what we should do. All right, so that's the news. That's Canada. We also have kind of an interesting thing. I got poison oak from my daughter, and I had to go to the doctor yesterday and get a shot of cortisone. And it dawned on me today, as my wife was applying the lotion that the doctor gave us to my back, because I can't reach it, it occurred to me why people don't get married. See, everybody has a persona, and when it comes to the world of sex, men and women, the persona is a very powerful one for men, and for women, a very alluring and sexy one. But we maintain those personas for a long time. The minute there's a crack in that, naturally, it becomes a scary thing. And what does that crack lead to? It leads to your wife putting poison oak lotion on your back. That's what it leads to. It leads to your wife putting you to bed and tucking you in, going, do you want some orange juice, honey? No, yeah, okay. In other words, no matter how strong, no matter how powerful, no matter how sexy, no matter how well you made love to her on that first date, which she just bonded with you forever, sooner or later you're going to want your Donald Duck cup full of orange juice. It's just every man is on his way to that when you get married. So I would suggest to any guy, if you have any fear of that happening, don't get married. Because since I've been married, I mean, everything, man. Every cold, and I've been sitting there sick, and I, you know, bad breath, and everything that is like, she sees it all, man. You know, you look stupid in a pair of pants, your shoes are dumb looking, she's wiping dirt off your face. Every wife becomes a mother. Yeah, she's licking her thumb and wiping dirt off your face. You're eight. And for the women, what's the flip side is no makeup in the morning. He sees you without your makeup. You know that there's some women whose husbands have never seen them without makeup? Honest to God, some women get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to put their makeup on. And their husbands have never seen them without makeup. You can't keep that up forever. It's impossible. Sooner or later, he's going to see you without the makeup. And he'll run screaming from the house. And then you can say, well, I had 3-4 good years. I'm kidding. He won't run screaming from the house. Then how do I know? Maybe he's nuts. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686.
Our troops and join in the liberation of their own country. And tonight, I have a special word for Secretary Rumsfeld, for General Franks, and for all the men and women who wear the uniform of the United States. America is grateful for a job well done. The character of our military through history, the daring of Normandy, the fierce courage of Iwo Jima, the decency and idealism that turned enemies into allies, is fully present in this generation. When Iraqi civilians looked into the faces of our servicemen and women, they saw strength and kindness and goodwill. When I look at the members of the United States military, I see the best of our country, and I'm honored to be your commander in chief. In the images of fallen statues, we have witnessed the arrival of a new era. For 100 of years of war, culminating in the nuclear age, military technology was designed and deployed to inflict casualties on an ever-growing scale. In defeating Nazi Germany and Imperial Japan, Allied forces destroyed entire cities, while enemy leaders who started the conflict were safe until the final days. Military power was used to end a regime by breaking a nation. Today, we have the greater power to free a nation by breaking a dangerous and aggressive regime. With new tactics and precision weapons, we can achieve military objectives without directing violence against civilians. No device of man can remove the tragedy from war. Yet it is a great advance when the guilty have far more to fear from war than the innocent. In the images of celebrating Iraqis, we have also seen the ageless appeal of human freedom. Decades of lies and intimidation could not make. The Iraqi people love their oppressors or desire their own enslavement. Men and women in every culture need liberty like they need food and water and air. Everywhere that freedom arrives, humanity rejoices. And everywhere that freedom stirs, let tyrants fear. We have difficult work to do in Iraq. We're bringing order to parts of that country that remain dangerous. We're pursuing and finding leaders of the old regime who will be held to account for their crimes. We've begun the search for hidden chemical and biological weapons and already know of hundreds of sites that will be investigated. We're helping to rebuild Iraq, where the dictator built palaces for himself instead of hospitals and schools. And we will stand with the new leaders of Iraq as they establish a government of, by, and for the Iraqi people. The transition from dictatorship to democracy will take time, but it is worth every effort. Our coalition will stay until our work is done, and then we will leave, and we will leave behind a free Iraq. The Battle of Iraq is one victory in a war on terror that began on September the 11th, 2001. And still goes on. That terrible morning, 19 evil men, the shock troops of a hateful ideology, gave America and the civilized world a glimpse of their ambitions. They imagined, in the words of one terrorist, that September the 11th would be the beginning of the end of America. By seeking to turn our cities into killing fields, terrorists and their allies believed they could destroy this nation's resolve and force our retreat from the world. They have failed. In the Battle of Afghanistan, we destroyed the Taliban, many terrorists, and the camps where they trained. We continue to help the Afghan people lay roads, restore hospitals, and educate all of their children. Yet we also have dangerous work to complete. As I speak, a Special Operations Task Force led by the 82nd Airborne is on the trail of the terrorists and those who seek to undermine the free government of Afghanistan. America and our coalition will finish what we have begun. Pakistan to the Philippines to the Horn of Africa, we are hunting down Al-Qaeda killers. 19 months ago, I pledged that the terrorists would not escape the patient justice of the United States. And as of tonight, nearly one half of Al-Qaeda's senior operatives have been captured or killed. The liberation of Iraq is a crucial advance in the campaign against terror. We've removed an ally of Al-Qaeda and cut off a source of terrorist funding. And this much is certain. No terrorist network will gain weapons of mass destruction from the Iraqi regime, because the regime is no more. In these 19 months that changed the world, our actions have been focused and deliberate and proportionate to the offense. We have not forgotten the victims of September the 11th, the last phone calls, the cold murder of children, the searches in the rubble. With those attacks, the terrorists and their supporters declared war on the United States. And war is what they got. Our war against terror is proceeding according to the principles that I have made clear to all. Any person involved in committing or planning terrorist attacks against the American people becomes an enemy of this country and a target of American justice. Any person, organization, or government that supports, protects, or harbors terrorists is complicit in the murder of the innocent and equally guilty of terrorist crimes. Any outlaw regime that has ties to terrorist groups and seeks or possesses weapons of mass destruction is a grave danger to the civilized world and will be confronted. And anyone in the world, including the Arab world, who works and sacrifices for freedom, has a loyal friend in the United States of America. Our commitment to liberty is America's tradition, declared at our founding, affirmed in Franklin Roosevelt's Four Freedoms, asserted in the Truman Doctrine and in Ronald Reagan's challenge to an evil empire. We are committed to freedom in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and in a peaceful Palestine. The advance of freedom is the surest strategy to undermine the appeal of terror in the world. Where freedom takes hold, hatred gives way to hope. When freedom takes hold, men and women turn to the peaceful pursuit of a better life. American values and American interests lead in the same direction. We stand for human liberty. The United States upholds these principles of security and freedom in many ways, with all the tools of diplomacy, law enforcement, intelligence, and finance. We are working with a broad coalition of nations that understand the threat and our shared responsibility to meet it. The use of force has been and remains our last resort. Yet all can know, friend and foe alike, that our nation has a mission. We will answer threats to our security, and we will defend the peace. Our mission continues. Al-Qaeda is wounded, not destroyed. The scattered cells of the terrorist network still operate in many nations, and we know from daily intelligence that they continue to plot against free people. The proliferation of deadly weapons remains a serious danger. The enemies of freedom are not idle, and neither are we. Our government has taken unprecedented measures to defend the homeland, and we will continue to hunt down the enemy before he can strike. The war on terror is not over, yet it is not endless. We do not know the day of final victory, but we have seen the turning of the tide. No act of the terrorists will change our purpose or weaken our resolve or alter their fate. Their cause is lost. Free nations will press on to victory. Nations in history have fought in foreign lands and remain to occupy and exploit. Americans, following a battle, want nothing more than to return home, and that is your direction tonight. After service in the Afghan and Iraqi theaters of war, after 100,000 miles on the longest carrier deployment in recent history, you are homeward bound. Some of you will see new family members for the first time. 150 babies were born while their fathers were on the Lincoln. Your families are proud of you, and your nation will welcome you. We are mindful as well that some good men and women are not making the journey home. One of those who fell, Corporal Jason Melillo, spoke to his parents 5 days before his death. Jason's father said he called us from the center of Baghdad, not to brag, but to tell us he loved us. Our son was a soldier. Every name, every life is a loss to our military, to our nation, and to the loved ones who grieve. There's no homecoming for these families. Yet we pray in God's time their reunion will come. Those we lost were last seen on duty. Their final act on this earth was to fight a great evil and bring liberty to others. All of you, all in this generation of our military, have taken up the highest calling of history. You are defending your country and protecting the innocent from harm. And wherever you go, you carry a message of hope, a message that is ancient and ever new. In the words of the prophet Isaiah, to the captives come out, and to those in darkness be free. Thank you for serving our country and our cause. May God bless you all, and may God continue to bless America.
That's President Bush. He's on board the SS Abraham Lincoln. It's on its way back to Coronado in Southern California, the naval base in San Diego. And he just concluded his remarks to the assembled seamen, the sailors, the Navy flyers that are on board there. And the remarks essentially began with him declaring an end to the major combat in Iraq. And then he went on to explain, and he said something that, you know, has been said many times and people don't really get it yet, that this was another battle in the war on terror that began on 9/11. And it's really kind of funny. It's funny, if it isn't so maddening sometimes, to contemplate people, the people who don't get that yet, the people who think that the world is operating, you know, that we're dealing with an enemy that operates according to the rules, that they send memos back and forth with each other, and therefore we can establish concrete linkage between Al-Qaeda, Hamas, Hezbollah, Al-Aqsa's Martyr Brigade, Al-Islam, and the rest of these groups. To say that these terror organizations are not interrelated is to be naive in a fatal extreme. And by taking out Iraq, we took out a terror-sponsoring regime and thus continued a war against terrorism that was declared in this country following the murders on 9/11. And so President Bush put it very clearly there and said something that needs to be said as well, that weapons of mass destruction, whether the nuclear, biological, etc., are not going to fall into the hands of any terror organization wanting to use them against us or anybody else from Iraq. Whereas there was a guy in power there that would have no problem giving those weapons to individuals or organizations, he's not there anymore. And as far as not finding any weapons of mass destruction yet in Iraq, whatever. Fact is, the guy had been told to get rid of them as of April 1991. He threw inspectors out in 1998. He hadn't complied fully. He was on his way to complying, and he was showing signs of complying, and they were showing a more of a willingness to comply, but not complying. And the guy was playing the UN like a Stradivarius, and finally somebody had to step in and say, guess what? Here's something for your birthday, and it's got a fuse on it, and don't open till Christmas. And it was us. The president also made a really good point, and we tried to make this over the last several weeks, too, and the point is being made, and the people who are against this war, especially people, leaders in the Arab world, they hate this. They just hate this. They just hate this. More than anything else about this war, the people that were against it and the leaders in the Middle East can't stand this next fact that I'm going to give you, and that is that this war was the most humanely fought in the history of warfare on this planet, that it was fought with an eye towards saving civilian lives, not destroying them. And he made a point that I hope you don't need a college education to get this. I don't think you do. But we have a lot of people who call this show many times saying, what about Hiroshima? What about Hiroshima? What about Dresden? We were terrorists, too. And he made the point that I've tried to make over and over again, and that is, warfare in those days necessitated the mass destruction of a civilization, of a civilized society, in order to topple a regime. There was no way to get to the regime without literally destroying the country. We had to do it to Germany. We had to do it to Japan. Had to. We don't have to do that anymore. We have weapons of such precision that we can strike the leadership where it resides. And as a result, we conducted a war where few civilians had to die and few soldiers. And that's an amazing thing. And for some reason, the anti-war people just can't stand that. It's the Phil Hendry Show. We'll be right back.
Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
So President Bush was on the aircraft carrier, and the whole job in Iraq, the major military job in Iraq is done. The major military operations in Afghanistan are done. We're going to stay there, he says, and I couldn't be happier hearing this. We're going to stay there until the situation is cooled out. And that includes all the Ba'ath Party, Shiite, loyalists there in Fallujah, and all of their meaningless fist pumping, and you know, whatever else they're pumping with their fists. And that's just the way it's going to be. So it's a new day, baby. It's a new day. Now, what does the future hold? We don't know. But I'll tell you this. I said this a month ago when this war started, and I'm going to say it again. What we do know is this. We don't know if the terrorists are going to come at us again. They probably will. Everybody says that because they want to cover their bases. It's kind of like not wanting to be wrong in a sports bet, you know? Who do you think's going to win the Super Bowl? Well, I like the Raiders a lot, but the Buccaneers, like saying, I don't know if we'll have a terrorist attack. We probably will, but who knows? Maybe. I don't know. But the fact is that if we get hit again, now they know what's coming at them. They know what to expect. You know, there's nothing vague about this. I think the president said it very well when he said it's a war. And how much better can you say it? How many different ways can you say it? They declared war, and now we've declared war back. If they wanted to talk and discuss, we can talk and discuss. If they want to chit-chat about how we might be able to make life better for all of the people concerned, we can chit-chat about how to make life better for all the people concerned. But we were attacked. Violence was used as a means to effect change. So we've responded with violence as a means to reject change. Now I hear people say, yes, but aren't we a bigger people than that? I guess what you mean by that is, can't we just go ahead and take it and not do anything about it? And I guess the answer to that is no. No intelligent human being would do that. So now the terrorists of the world are fully briefed. They're fully briefed. They've been given the clipboard with all the information on it. Hit us again, and this is what's going to happen. Another regime will fall. Maybe Syria next time. Maybe Iran next time. It's the only thing you can do when you have a country like ours that's like a gold mine in the middle of a desert, in the middle of an empty strip mine pit. That's what this country represents, not only to us, but to people around the world. And when someone comes after it with the full intent of destroying it, which was what the full intent of the September 11th hijackers was, as well as Al-Qaeda's expressed intent to destroy America, kill Americans and kill Jews, this is what they want to do. They want to destroy this country. They want this country to go away. You can't sit there and let that happen. And you can't play politics as if this is 1968 or 1970, 1971, and we're on the campus there at Kent State, or we're all gathered around the Washington Monument singing freaking folk songs. This, you know, the peace symbol, man, that was a great thing. I wore one. I had a peace button during Vietnam. It's over, man. With that, those days are as anachronistic as the high button shoes. There does come a time when you have to fight, and this is the time. Really cracks me up, by the way, speaking of the Hollywood brethren around here. Wasn't it Janine Garofalo who was saying not too long ago she may not get her sitcom on the air because of her anti-war views? And then about 3 days ago, I heard the quote where she says she's never been more popular. Boy, they'll play. You talk about us talking out of both sides of our mouths, the people who are in favor of this war. Those guys will play any side of the street that works. One minute they're being shut down and they're being blackballed and they're being censored, and the next minute everything is just beautiful. Nothing's changed. By the way, one of the things I was saying at the beginning of the show is the long shot of the likelihood of my pilot getting on the air on NBC is. I mean, nothing against NBC, but they, you know, they know their business and they know what they want to put on the air. It's a super long shot because, first of all, I'm a weird-ass guy, and the things that I like to be involved in are pretty weird, and television is not about weird. It's about mainstream. But the other thing that I got to tell you is, guess who else has a pilot that I'm going up against? Heather Locklear? I don't think so. What do you think my chances are against her? I'm slightly better looking, but beyond that, she's funnier. Heather Locklear and one other guy's got a pilot over there. What's his name? Tracy Morgan. You know him? From Saturday Night Live? I got no prayer. Anyway, getting back to the war and my personal problems aside, that's exactly what was said on September the 20th, 2001, when we declared war on terrorism, and that's what happened, and this is a phase in that war, and the people that don't understand it, the people who say you haven't found weapons of mass destruction, the people who say you didn't get Saddam Hussein, the people who say this isn't going to make us safe from terrorism, these are all people who are just looking for arguments, knowing full well there isn't any substance to them, because they just don't like the idea of a certain kind of person waging certain kinds of political action. Maybe they call themselves liberals, maybe they call themselves conservatives, maybe they call themselves Democrats, maybe they call themselves Republicans, but they don't have any interest in saving Iraqi lives. They just don't want Bush being successful for whatever reason. Look, I didn't vote for the guy either, but I live in this country. And I'd like to see it successful. And if somebody's got a good idea, I don't care if it's a Republican or a Democrat, I'll listen. Anybody that doesn't do that is an idiot. I'm a Democrat, yeah? Well, Bush, I don't go for it. Why? Because he's a Republican. What, are you stupid or something? You must be stupid. What kind of way is that to conduct oneself in life? If somebody has got a good idea, whether he is a Republican or a Democrat, a liber-freakantarian, or a dachshund, they got a great idea. I want to listen to it. I want to know what the plan is, and if need be, I'll go along with it. So that's what happened tonight with the speech. We move on now. We move on trying to rebuild Iraq. Let's see who wants to pitch in on that one. I doubt seriously if too many people will. We move on now in Afghanistan. We need to help rebuild that. Let's see who wants to pitch in there. I doubt seriously if many people will. And once again, it'll be hung on America as usual. All right, we'll be right back. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. 1-800-449-8686.
Career. But, you know, Americans, we are so guilty, no more than any other people. Europeans are like this too, especially the British. We get so guilty about having it so good that we want to return to the primitive roots. We want to go back to the days when we lived in mud huts and fashioned canoes and grew wild things out there in the field. And if we can't do it because, frankly, we really don't have the guts to do that, I mean, who wants to give up their Lexus, right? Who wants to give up their home in Mill Valley, right? But we can at least, I know, we can be human shields. We'll trot off down to Iraq, and we've long done this. We identify with the third world people to give themselves, you know, to give ourselves more human credentials. And, you know, they're like these hypocrites that call themselves human shields. You know, those hypocrites who went to the Middle East, and the minute they got to Iraq and saw what was at stake, they suddenly turned coward and ran home? Was there anybody anywhere that believed those people were going to hang around and actually be human shields? Anyone who grew up in America and knows middle-class society as intimately as, you know, all of us do, or just knows this country as intimately as all of us do, was there anybody here who really believed that any American going over there was really going to stick around and be in a human shield? I mean, you know, don't make me laugh. But we do that. We feel bad about our success. We feel bad about our wealth. We must have accrued it criminally. No country on earth can be as successful as this one without acquiring what it has criminally. And I'm the first guy to tell you, because I happen to know specific instance where the United States has engaged in international criminal behavior to further the lifestyle of its people. The problem is, nobody tells you about every other country doing it too. And in point of fact, we do it a hell of a lot less than most. And most of the wealth that we have in this country, most of the good time and the good life we have in this country is as a result of the good work that we do, not destabilizing regimes someplace. So, to answer the questions of the Mike Farrells or the, who's the other one? Barbara Streisand? Who's Shane? The rest of them. To answer your question, you can have a successful country. You can have a great nation like America, and it didn't have to get here committing crimes. We might have gotten where we are today being a pretty decent people. So don't feel guilty. Don't feel bad. And by the way, nobody, I don't know what Martin Sheen is talking about when he says he's being censored by his bosses at NBC. Nobody ever told me not to say anything. And I got an opinion, and this is just my opinion, but I think he's lying through his teeth. I don't think anybody ever told Martin Sheen to not say anything. I think that guy's a professional martyr. I think he'd like to be hammered right up on the cross next to Jesus if he could. I think maybe what you need, pal, is another trip to, maybe you need another handful of neurotransmitter, depletion medicine or something. You ain't being blacklisted. You know, nobody's hassling you. The only people being hassled are the rest of us who got to watch you on that show. All right, 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. Bill Henry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
I got some interesting news here from the world of Hollywood. Elizabeth Hurley, she blew up at a British Airways flight attendant the other day. When Elizabeth Hurley is the former girlfriend of, Hugh Grant. Very beautiful woman. She blew up at a British Airways flight attendant the other day when they wouldn't give her married boyfriend a first-class seat next to hers. Now, Hurley and Aaron Nair were at Gatwick Airport preparing to jet off to Barbados. Hurley paid almost $9,000 for a first-class seat, but Nair used his frequent flyer miles for club-class passage, according to London's Daily Mirror. Now, I'm guessing that club class is like a business class, so it's not quite first class, which is where she was, and she asked that he be upgraded. Well, when she was refused, she yelled, "Don't you know who I am? I bloody demand that he's upgraded. Don't you know he's a millionaire? I'm always flying on British Airways, so you better pull your finger out," said Miss Hurley, with justifiable anger. It was at that moment when one of the flight attendants took a Scotch egg from out of the refrigerator in the galley, shoved it up Miss Hurley's rear end, they opened the emergency exit, and threw her out of the jet. Right now, there are search parties somewhere over the North Atlantic, seeing if there's anything left. One submarine said they did find the Scotch egg. Think it flew out of her ass on her way down. Pop! All right, 1-800-449-8686. Well, that's too bad, Liz. The boyfriend can't sit next to you, and he's married, and... Hi, I got a great idea. How about if his wife and he buy the first class tickets? And I'm sure they wouldn't mind upgrading you. They could upgrade you to one of the wings. Here's a folding chair and a wing. It's the Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686.